Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, shared on accessmedia.nz with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Greetings, everybody. You're coming from the Wire Wrapper, and we'll be talking about avant gardening. This program looks at different ways of gardening, the effects of the changes and producing food. Our presenters today are Margaret. Hi, everybody. Anna Marie.
Hello.
Hello. And Marnie.
Hello.
Good. So we're all here today. Now we're going to talk about regenerative farming or agriculture. Would either one of you like to jump in there, boots and all?
I can leap into it.
Lead in.
Okay, right. So it's a you can also call it sustainable agriculture. It's a relatively new term. It kind of encompasses a whole bunch of things. Not overly well defined, which is one of the issues with it, but it's a conservation and rehabilitation approach to food and farming systems. Focuses on topsoil regeneration, increasing biodiversity, improving the water cycle, enhancing ecosystem services and bits and pieces. It talks a lot about biosequestration.
Carbon sequestration,
yeah. Which is kind of getting carbon back into the soil, and there's a bunch of various ways that they do that. One is rotational grazing, so you let your grass grow really long, and then you come along, the animals come along and they eat it. When you have grass and things that grow quite tall, you have a root system that also goes down quite deep. If your grass is really short, then your roots are really short, kind of thing. My dad used to do rotational grazing with a sheep farm for years and years and years, and that was his theory, which, you know, seems to be quite reasonable. There's a whole heap of different practices that you can use. They do a lot of composting.
One of the interesting things about this is the inclusion of animals. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the what you call modern approaches, the stuff that's been practiced and defined over the last 20 years or so, excludes animals, and it's very much plant-based.
Yeah.
But the regenerative agriculture, or sustainable agriculture, if you want to call it, relies very heavily on livestock, particularly on cattle, which traditionally, particularly over the last few years, there's been a big hoo-ha about cattle and about methane emissions and all that kind of stuff. But having cattle on your land is an active and essential part of the whole sustainable agricultural thing.
Is that because of the way they eat, and also because of their poo?
Yeah. It's because of the way that this system works, it relies very much on maximum coverage of the soil. So that's, and we've talked about this in previous programs, about the fact that when you cover the soil, you protect the soil, you protect the microbes and the life inside the soil. And this sustainable agriculture relies on that, but rather than putting mulch on, it relies on having cover crops and very long grass. And when you move your livestock through the system, you only have them on a patch of grass for a day or 2 days, and then you move them on. Traditionally, with dairy farming and other large animal farming practice today, the stock eats the grass down to pretty much nothing, and then you move them on.
Mm. Okay, so this one, they let them just eat the top kind of...
They graze through the top part of it, and then they move them on. So you always have that deep cover over the soil, which helps to protect the soil, helps to keep the moisture in the soil, and...
Keeps the roots in the soil.
Keeps the roots in the soil. It also means that non-grass plants, like clovers and plantains and all those other mixed herbage that is really a hallmark of most agricultural, most organic approaches, those survive better because they're not constantly being eaten down to nothing.
Mm. And they virtually reseed themselves, I would imagine. Yeah,
they will. That's the other thing as well, is if you leave this long grass and leave it to seed, it will self-seed.
So you're not having to replant your pastures all the time. Is that the...
They do. But they'll do it in a slightly different way. So they often have a no-till approach to this. So they're not digging the soil up. They're not disturbing that all that little fungi system that's actually in the soil that we're talking about. So they'll harvest a barley crop or wheat crop, and then they'll come through and put soybeans down, you know, in a kind of a direct till. Sorry, a direct sowing.
It's a direct drilling.
Right. Yes, yep.
And you direct. You don't plough first. Mm. So you harvest your crop, whatever that is, whether it's a cereal crop or whatever it is. You harvest that, and then you don't plough. You direct drill the next seed crop directly into the remains of the old one. Mm. The remains of the old one help to fertilise the ground. You don't disturb the ground, and then the new crop grows up out of that. The no-till is about not disturbing the soil. It's about keeping those microbes under cover.
Mm. Right. Is it a controversial way of farming?
The issue that people have with it is that it is very overblown in its claims. So when they first brought it out, this was going to be solving climate change. This was going to be sequestering so much carbon out of the atmosphere that it was going to negate all of the impacts that people make on the world. You know, this was okay. Really good. This was going to be it. This was going to be the big
answer.
Salvation.
Okay.
This was the answer. The problem with that is it's not. It is not enough. It is the amount of damage that we're doing is just massive. You know, sort of there's you know, not to mention the forest fires before you get started on that. But when we talk about something as being a cure-all for climate change, it distracts away from the other things we should be doing. And so it's a little measure, but it's not the whole thing.
Okay.
So we need to be very careful that we aren't using it and going, rightio, you know, dust our hands off and go, that's us. That's all we need to do.
Okay.
And so that is the issue with it, is that it's... And it, it's, the other problem is that it is not clearly defined. There are some rather large companies that are lurching off into this who are looking at... I step back a little bit, as I do, rush off in a thousand different directions at once. The organics movement in America is billions of dollars. That label, that trademark to put it on your food, to have it in the supermarket as organic. They have a certified system which costs an awful lot of money to be recertified every year and to meet very stringent, you know, thingies what they're doing. Regenerative agriculture is going down the same way. It's not overly clearly defined, but they're going to make it more defined, and then they will bring in a whole kind of label
certification again. Yes, okay.
Things.
Yeah, there'll be standards and
there'll be standards, but it is mostly about the marketing.
If you like I always say with these things, follow the damn money, because
exactly.
You know that's pretty much what it's mostly about. And I appreciate that. At least initially, the thinking behind a lot of these systems and the desire to improve the environment and the desire to improve the food that people eat and to help with climate change drives a lot of this stuff. But by the time we get to that point of certification and standards and all everything that goes with that, then it's pretty much all about the money.
Yeah.
And I must say here as well that I have some issues here with this being the ideal way to resolve a lot of these problems. Because this is not and can never be a truly self-contained system.
No.
If you are growing cattle, for example, so you have your acres of land, you have your cattle on it, they breed, you grow the calves, and then you sell the calves off farm because that's what generates an income for your farm. You are taking the nutrients and the minerals and everything else that goes into growing those calves is gone. It's off farm.
Mm.
You can only do that for so long before you start depleting the ground that you're using to run that system. You have to bring some sort of fertilizer in. Now, this system doesn't use traditional phosphate fertilizers, and the idea is that you're not shipping fertilizer halfway across the world, but you have to have some form of input to keep that ground in a state where it will grow grass, because if you keep taking the minerals and the crops, nutrition off, you sell it off farm, it goes, eventually those soils are going to become depleted.
So what do they do to
compost?
All right, so now we go back to compost.
But that's got to come from somewhere.
Okay.
So you're either making it yourself, And if you're doing a big hot composting system on a massive scale, there's an awful lot of industry that goes into that. You know, a lot of tractors rumbling around producing emissions and things. So it's a sort of a...
But even then, you cannot, if you're sending stuff off farm, you cannot produce enough to replace what you sent off farm. You're going to have to bring something in from somewhere.
Mm. So what did they bring in? They bring in some form of...
Yeah, well,
it's going to have to be some form of compost or something similar. Mm. But a lot when you've got the stock on your land, then you've got the benefit of the poo,
yes,
which you can harrow in, and that's a benefit in itself. But the next time the cows come around, they're taking that nutrition back out in the form of grass.
So you've got to constantly...
So it's a cycle, but because if the cattle weren't being sent off farm, weren't being sold, and the cattle were, when they died, they were returned to the soil, that would be a closed system, but it's not. That's not what happens with farms, because you have to make some money somewhere to run your farm.
Well, it's the same with cereal crops. You know, you're just depleting the soil as well.
Absolutely. So you have to find some way to put that back.
Yes.
Right. So in New Zealand, are there people following this system?
Yes. Yes, there are. I saw a Country Calendar program the other day of some people down south, and they one of the... It can be quite pretty, actually, oddly, because they use so many wildflowers and plants that flower to bring in beneficial insects and to increase the biodiversity that's actually there.
Oh, so that's a big part of it too, is the biodiversity. And they had cattle, if I remember rightly.
Yes, they did. That's right, yeah.
Okay, so in that system you have both crops and cattle and probably wildflowers, if you can get your...
Oh, you can use all sorts of things. You can use mustards and lupins.
Yes,
and,
okay.
And things like that. They're trying to sort of keep the water in the soil and the nutrients and things, and there's some really good reasons why they do what they do. It just isn't enough, you know.
I think it's a step in the right direction. I think the idea of the no-till thing really really appeals to me for a start. And traditionally when farmers are preparing ground for a new crop, they would turn over whatever is sitting, whether it's pasture or whether it's the remains of a previous crop or whatever it is. You turn it over by ploughing, so you turn that matter into the soil.
Yes.
And that helps to return some fertility to the soil, because you're turning that matter in. So you're returning those minerals and whatever else back into the soil. But you're also exposing that soil. You're also, it's bare, and it can be bare for some time if you're not immediately replanting straight away. So all the things that we've talked about that are traditionally essential for growing good crops, all the microbes in the soil, etc., die. Because they've been exposed to the heat and light and air and all those things that they don't necessarily like. Well, not air, but things that they don't necessarily like.
Broken up too, you know.
But if you don't do that, if you have a no-till system and you direct drill with seeds, you avoid all of that.
So, except you had a giant tractor rampaging over the top of the soil, crushing it. You know, that's there's an issue with cattle and tractors and things. Every time you drive over soil, you're crushing it. You are squashing the life out of it. These tractors are very big and they're very heavy, even with their double wheels. You know, so they do a lot of damage. It's quite hard to avoid that unless you're just going to get out there and...
Unless you're going to get out there with your bucket and start chucking handfuls of seeds around.
Yeah. Well, this is why they use little miniature animals, you know, the smaller cows, the little Dexters and the sort of the... what are those Scottish Highland cattle, because they're littler, whereas you get a giant Friesian dairy cow dancing around on its little tiny feet, and they are big animals, you know, and they really do crush the soil. And they
Not as big as they used to be. A modern Friesian's quite a lot smaller than a traditional old style one.
I didn't know that.
Quite a lot smaller, because you want to be growing milk, not bone.
Okay.
You know, right. So they are a bit smaller. But I appreciate what you're saying, but the fact that you move the cattle on so regularly means that the damage to the soil is minimised.
Right. Yep.
And the fact that you rotationally graze, it can be a while before those cows come back onto that piece of land again, which gives it the opportunity to recover.
But now you mentioned your father had sheep. Is sheep also a good...
No.
Because they nibble much slower, don't
Goats
they?
Goats would be better. There's also a parasite burden here too we need to talk about. So when you have things like goats, if you have them on very short pasture, the parasites and the worms, they live on that bottom kind of 5 centimetres of grass stalks, because that's where, you know, it's nice and moist down there and things. They don't tend to grow higher up the thing. So sheep always have a lot of parasite issues and things. You're constantly drenching sheep. You know, this is the thing about them, because they nibble grass very low to
the ground. I know, they clear your grass off.
They do, and they will keep your grass essentially in just grass and clover, because they take out most of the weeds because of the way that they graze.
Yes.
But cows, on the other hand, because they tend to graze up high and they won't graze where they've weed or pooed, so that's why you get this very lumpy looking kind of, you know, your cow paddock. If you do the regenerative agriculture, you get these big bits of green and you go, well, that looks really lovely, why wouldn't you eat that? But in actual fact, the cows will avoid that. They'll eat all the other grass around where they've had their poo and things, which is a really good thing, because it allows all that to go back into the soil with your little dung beetles.
This is where you need to be harrowing. So if you go out and harrow the paddock, because it spreads all that poo out, and it disappears that much more quickly.
And also...
Have you seen a worm? And what is it? What are those dung beetles in action? I battle the dung beetles in the neighbouring horse paddock when I go up to, you know, you've got to be really, really fast with horse poo and a dung beetle. They are just amazing.
Oh, they roll it up and take it into their little hardy ways.
They do. Yes. They're only little.
They're actually brought in.
They are
from Africa.
Yes, and I was because I'm, you know, there's not a lot of that sort of biological control. It has actually worked overly well in New Zealand. You know, like bunnies wasn't a good idea. Ferrets was even worse. Stoats didn't end well. And there's a bunch of stuff we brought in as a brilliant idea.
Yes,
that ended rather badly.
No, that's right. But I mean, the dung beetles are relatively recent.
Well, they don't seem to be attacking anything else, do they?
No, they seem to be fine. And they're quite interesting little things.
They are absolutely.
Because they roll up the poo and they hide it.
Yes. And they can take a giant horse poo. And I know this because I'm chasing them around the paddock, and get rid of it almost overnight. They are so fast.
Mm. Oh, they're good workers then.
Oh, they are.
They are. Yeah.
Oh, they're great. Fantastic. They're great. Yeah. Except when I'm trying to gather the horse poo.
Oh, I see. Oh, you must talk to Donald. Last week he got, while we were talking, he took in, was it 8 barrel loads of horse poo from next door, because their horse is next door. Yes. So now he got to put them out in the garden.
Do they have dung beetles over there?
No, I must actually ask her. She didn't mention it. But it's a very large pile. But as a total sideline, just because I want to throw it in, I don't know if any of you see Jeremy Clarkson has got a farm now. You know, he was the one with the racing cars. I mean, well, he bought a tractor from Germany, which is the biggest thing, as big as this room virtually. And when you're saying about, you know, flattening, I could imagine what he's done to the soil, because this thing is huge, absolutely over the top. I mean, he is over the top, but he's done quite a lot apparently for exposing farming in, he's in Oxfordshire, in Britain, about the issues and the rules and regulations of what you can do and what you can't do. Mm. So as a sideline, with a good glass of wine, have a watch. But he's now getting back to, so regenerative, when I read about it, I thought, that sounds like it's going back to more traditional farming.
Most of these systems are.
You know, like a mixed farm.
Mm, not really. Well, okay. in a way, because traditionally small farms were not just monocultures. They were not just growing one thing. Mm. So from that perspective, yes, it is going back to that more diverse, you know, we'll crop some hay and we'll grow some grains and we'll grow some cabbages or whatnot, and we'll have some cattle and we'll have some sheep and we'll have some chickens, that kind of model farm, if you will. But certainly from the no-till perspective, it's very different to a traditional farm because it doesn't
indulge do the in tilling. Plowing. Okay.
It's also done on a very large scale. You know, the Midwest cereal farmers are now looking at using regenerative agriculture.
This is in the States?
This is in the States, yeah.
Oh, how interesting.
Big farmers are going back into this. It is interesting listening to them. It's sort of, I think every 5 years they're allowed to get out there and till, which kind of destroys a lot of stuff that they've actually done. I don't know why they need to do that,
They haven't been totally convinced to leave it.
Well, it's a cost saving as well. If you think about it, if you go out and harvest a crop, I mean, if you talk in the Midwest here, you're talking fields that are
acres
and acres and acres. They're absolutely enormous.
No fences.
No fences. No. If you're sending machines out to harvest a crop, and then you're sending machines out to till the earth, and then you're sending machines out to sow a new crop, if you can cut that middle piece out, you've saved yourself a third of your costs.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So why wouldn't
And this you? Is, I mean, this is also modern farming is producing for the world. It's no longer just for your local community or anything. These are, I mean, for the last 100 years, we're talking about massive food production, growing population.
Yep.
So a lot of these ideas are really good, but they've also got to balance it with how much they produce, you know, for going on.
Yeah, I mean, the Midwest farmers, it's a little bit political and a bit, you know, there's a lot of corn, a lot of monocropping, repeatedly monocropping.
Yes,
so
yes.
So there's a few political issues in there. Sometimes they're paid to do, you know, it's quite complicated what they're doing, and often they're not actually producing a food source for people, they're producing a food source
for animals, the animals, yes.
Which has also got other issues as well. So, yeah, it's quite a complicated thing. I don't know whether they use genetically modified things in this. Do they use in regenerative agriculture? I know they're not supposed to use chemicals or pesticides. Do they use GMO, you know, like
I can only imagine that they must do.
Roundup resistant soybeans?
Because so much of agriculture is now based around GMO.
Yeah,
okay. What is GMO?
Genetically modified.
Well, I think lots of plants are now. I mean, even in the garden, you get a really pure, you can't buy a pure thing that it's been modified or changed over time.
Most things have. Breeding.
Most things have, but they've just been changed over a very long time.
Yes.
And they've been changed through selective breeding rather than through
gene splicing.
Yeah. Okay.
You think about what a carrot looked like 500 years ago, and it looked nothing like a carrot looks like today. Absolutely
purple
nothing.
And white. What were they? Were purple, weren't they? Were they purple?
No. I think they were white, but they were very, very tiny, very, very tiny root with a big, big top piece with the leaves and whatnot.
Okay.
And it was only through selective breeding that they slowly got bigger and bigger.
And orange.
And orange.
Yes.
Because they're not naturally orange, believe it or not.
Okay,
gosh. So let's move on to a bit about Japanese farming you want to talk about?
Yes, so Japanese farming is, I'll just find the chapter name. I'm going to stuff this up horribly. Masanobu Fukoa. Oh, I think I mangled that. I do apologise. He sort of made up something called natural farming or do-nothing farming.
I thought that's what we do.
No. He really takes it to the extreme.
I'm all for the simple approach. Farming sounds fabulous to me.
But they do an intensive because it's a small area.
Okay, so he got away with what in his mind. I mean, and he upset his family and a whole bunch of people by doing this because they've got a very, you know, rigid system of how they garden over there. Traditional gardening. So they have the rice paddies and the steps. He said, nope, don't do that. Don't step your hills. Don't put in swales. Don't do that with your rice paddy things. Just plant trees. I'm not quite sure how that was feeding anybody, but anyway, what did he do? So he was no till, no herbicide, no pesticide. He was very much into natural farming. His system was, what did he do? It was very aesthetic. What are you doing? He didn't use any fertilizer, and it was basically like a sort of a natural forest. So you just basically let everything go really, really wild.
So it's a food forest by any means.
But a really big food forest. You never pruned anything. You never cut anything down. And you know the seed balls that people talk about, those little clay seed balls where you get some clay and you put the seeds in and then you start hurling them all over your farm. He was the proponent. He invented that, basically, sort of thing. So he'd gone back to a very, very old, very traditional way of just
farming,
letting things go.
Food.
He wrote a book called The One Straw Revolution, which was all about this kind of natural farming and things. But he wasn't overly popular.
I think, again, this is one of those systems where if you have a big old piece of land and you've got hardly any people living on it and you can indulge in that kind of behaviour?
It's
horses for courses, isn't it?
It is. The only problem with this sort of thing is that if you have a massive forest, the only place that forest is actually producing food is on the edge.
Because it's not light.
It's all about lights and heights and how things work. And really, really big trees have got all the fruit at the top.
Yes.
And there's not a lot down below, and then your crops are underneath, and you know they need to light shade, and there's not that much of the light shade. So I'm not that convinced by this particular.
Because the other, in Japan and in China as well, they grow in very small areas.
Yes.
Amazing
very,
amount
very
of food.
Intensive.
Very intensive. That's very right. Intercropping, mixing up the things they grow together. I mean, in China, even in the busiest places, you'll see a little thing at the side of the road, yes. And there's little things growing there. Yeah. So it's amazing. That's where bonsais come from. Anyway, I'm just being facetious. But now we're going to move on to our next program very soon. So it's the last chance to say anything about regenerative or alternative farming.
It's a great start, but we need to do more.
Okay.
Yeah, I think as with all systems, it has its issues, but fundamentally there are some very sound principles in there. Mm.
So anyone interested, read up on it, think through it first before you jump in.
As with everything else, take the bits that work for you.
That's right. Follow the money too.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for today, and thank you all.
Cheers. Yeah.